Welcome to the Commercial Property Investor Podcast, the show dedicated to the private investor, and I'm your host, Jerry Alexander. We want to show you how to cross the divide from residential investing over to commercial property investing. Through interviews, tips, and lessons learned, we share experiences of investing and give you the inspiration, knowledge, and confidence to enjoy this great cash flowing strategy. So let's get started. Welcome back. Nice of you to join me. Ideas for this podcast are all over the place. I used to worry before I got started that there would only be a short life for a podcast on commercial property. How wrong was I? There are a huge number of topic areas that I haven't even touched yet. I'm conscious of that, and there's things I really need to bring some guests on to cover. What I do is I actually use an Evernote folder. It's like a little app on my phone. Whenever I get an idea, I just jump in there and scribble it down. And that list just is endless. And all my podcast ideas go in there. And as I say, there's lots and lots of them. Some of them I write quite a lot of text, so I sort of fill it out because I'm in a creative mood at the time. And other times I just note down a couple of things like, oh, I must explore that later. And then sometimes I dig in there and I find a topic and I think, gee, that was something that had some really good legs and I forgot all about it. So that's what I use. And sometimes those things come to me, of course, when I'm talking to investors. People start asking me questions. They're talking about a deal. I think, oh, crikey, yeah, that is a can of worms you've just opened there. So it goes in my Evernote folder. And sometimes there's topics I can share on here and I develop them out in a podcast, write down some ideas and then record them for you guys. And others I keep in reserve for our more advanced members. But that, I guess, really depends on the level of detail, because quite frankly, some might even bore you because it's really quite intense about a specific topic. Anyway, recently, one of our listeners, Ewan Dudding, got in touch to tell me he's built his residential business to a level where he's handed in his notice to go full-time property. So well done, Ewan. That's fantastic. And he asked about rent to rent. This is in terms of commercial for his trading business and to sublet space to get started in commercial. He said, really, is this something that's viable? Is this something I could do? I thought, great, this is a great question. This needs to go in my Evernote folder. I'm going to discuss this one. It was only last week I thought, right, now I'm going to run with it, this podcast. And we're actually going through a rent-to-rent deal right now on a small space ourselves. It's roughly about 2,500 square feet. And in the past, I've also rented space. I've rented some offices and then I've sublet those on to other tenants, I guess. I've just had to make sure that I'll go through some of that stuff, but I had to make sure that the license agreement's tied up and all that sort of thing so we didn't get caught out. But it is definitely possible. So what did Ewan mean? Let me just clarify that. Basically, what he's saying is he's got a trading business to do his property. He's thinking about getting some space for that business, but why not get something oversized and then try and sublet some of those extra parts of that office or that space that he doesn't need right now? And it's a perfectly reasonable question to ask, and actually really a quite good way to get into commercial. If you have a trading business, it always helps oil the wheels of getting this whole thing going. So I've mentioned rent-to-rent a few times on the podcast before, but I've never done a full episode about it. So thanks for asking the question, Ewan. I'm going to cover that today. And that goes for anyone, of course, who'd like a topic covered. I'll see what I can do. Just jot it down. Let me know if there's something you want me to chat about. If I don't have any experience of it myself, I'll try to find someone who does. And we can cover it on the podcast. So let's get on to rent to rent. I'm going to cover things like why would you? Important things to look out for. Benefits for landlords, you know, why would they do this? Risks, of course, how to mitigate some of those risks. I'm going to touch on management contracts, because although it's separate to rent-to-rent, it's quite important, and sometimes those phrases are used interchangeably. And then finally, I'm going to talk a little bit about competition. So let's get started. Why would you? What's the point in doing this sort of thing? Well, here's an interesting fact for you. WeWork and Regus, who I'm sure you've heard of in the flexible space sector, have used rent-to-rent and increasingly management contracts, which I will come on to later, to grow their businesses really quickly. IWG, who own Regus, have over 3,000 locations around the globe. Mark Dixon, who's built that business, has clearly not gone out and looked at every single one of those buildings. He's built up a system, a team. There's quite a lot of brands in there now. But most of the time, they don't own the property. They don't go through all that palaver of buying the property. They sign up rent to rent or leases. But as I say, predominantly now, my understanding is predominantly now, they're management contracts. It's also a way to get into the market without too much capital. You don't have to buy a building. So yes, you could be going for fast growth, but for private investors who are just trying to get started in this market, maybe have a business like Ewan's talking about, maybe it's a way to get into the market without having to go out and buy a building. Because there's some things that the lenders, when you're looking at buying buildings to do this sort of stuff and invest in the buildings, lenders are looking for certain things. They're looking for credibility. What's your experience, right? That's one of the key things they want to look at. The other one is, if the project you're taking on, this is if you're buying a building, doesn't work out, can you still afford to pay the mortgage? Can you service the debt? These are two bits that the lenders look for. So if you get started by doing a rent to rent or getting something oversized and doing it that way, you can build up credibility and experience and also some cash flow, which will help with that whole serviceability bit on loans. Anyway, bearing in mind, as I say, this podcast is aimed at private investors moving over to commercial. I'm not talking about global expansion here. I'm just talking about getting started. So here's some of the important things to look out for. Try and keep your own capital costs down. This is on fit out. Some do this by agreeing with the landlord that they'll actually do the capital expenditure. But this will have a quid pro quo. So let's just say they've got a big open plan space right now. And you've analysed the market, you've looked at what people are needing, and you think, right, do you know what? We need to divide this up into 20 units, various different sizes, business lounges, all different things we've talked about before. And who's going to pay for the fit out? The challenge, of course, if you're going to do the fit out and spend tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands in some cases, on fitting out the space, then whose space is it? Well, ultimately it belongs to the landlord. So what are you going to do about making sure you get return on that investment as quickly as possible? Now, what some of the investors will do is they'll actually get the landlord to supplement that capital expenditure. But as I say, that might have a quid pro quo, which basically means, for instance, your lease might be more expensive. Your share of profit might be more expensive. So there'll be things that you might lose on the other side, but you're equally maybe keeping down your capital expenditure, reducing your risk. Of course, when you reduce risk, you reduce potential reward, but that's just the way it is with these sort of things, isn't it? One of the other important things to look out for, though, when I talk about leases, is that if you do take on one of these spaces, as I mentioned earlier, and we've done this before, we've taken on space which we didn't own, we've rented it, and we had to make sure that our license periods for our tenants that we moved in, or our clients that moved in, tied up with the notice period that we could be given by our landlord. Because the last thing you want, of course, is you take out a lease, you have it on a 5-year one or something, and then year 4, you can't do any more 12-month licenses. You've got to make sure you do 9 months, 6 months, 3 months, whatever it is. You're going to have to tie those up because you don't want a license period finishing beyond a lease because you're now committed and you can't give them the space. Just a small thing, but it's something if you're working on this on a shorter timescale to keep an eye on. Another important thing to look out for with all kind of leases, if you're going to be a tenant effectively, is dilapidations. So sometimes you might get all excited, you get this space, agreed with the landlord doesn't put in the capital expenditure, you do. And when you get to the other end of this lease, which might be a few years, might be 10 years, there might be a big dilapidations clause because actually the landlord wants you to take it right back to the way he gave it to you or she gave it to you in the first place, which can be really expensive. So you've got to watch out for that dilapidations clause. And that's one of the ones that you really could try and negotiate out or at least negotiate the liability down on that one at the front end. Another important thing to look out for if you're looking at this sort of thing is service charges. Is this a straightforward internal repairing insuring lease? Is it a full repairing insuring lease? Are there additional costs around the rest of that property that you're going to have to start paying out for due to service charges. So just another one that I think you really should keep an eye on, because it will affect your ability to make any income, basically some net profit on this deal. I know it's an obvious one, but check there isn't a clause to prevent subletting, because sometimes most leases actually will say it won't be held without undue something or another from the landlord. But you don't want to go and ask them every single time you're subletting, because if you're going to break up space, you need to have it in there. What we've done, in fact, on the one we were just telling you about, we're doing ourselves, we've written in there, not subletting per se on a lease basis, but subletting on a license basis. And the landlord's much more happy with that, because the licenses are slightly less onerous, they tend to be shorter periods of time, and we, of course, describe to them our 12-month license, our standard license. So that one helps you get around that, but just make sure you don't get caught up in one where there's subletting's being prevented, or at least it needs checking every single time, because churn, especially in the early days, can be quite high until you get customers that are staying for a longer period of time. So something important to look out for. So anyway, why would these landlords look at this? Well, first of all, they're going to get a letting, so that's a good thing. If it's part of a larger location, then it can act as a feeder. So a lot of these smaller units, businesses that are maybe coming from out of town, out of county, state, whatever, or out of the country, are just putting their feet down to test, because often flex space is used for that. These businesses, when they realise, right, we need to build our team here, we need to get some roots down, they might start looking for leased space. Not always. Sometimes they'll stay with you in flex space, but they sometimes look for bigger spaces you might not be able to provide. And that... Let me take a moment to thank Office R&D for supporting the podcast. It's really important to us that we only work with sponsors that we've used ourselves. It's all about being authentic, right? Office R&D is the best flexible workspace platform we've come across, and believe me, we've tried a few systems over the last 20 years. Office R&D helps us manage our invoicing, customer community, reporting, building access, and many more aspects of our day-to-day operations. Why not book yourself a free demo to see how they can help you free up more time to grow your business? Follow the partner link in the show notes.
It can actually feed into the landlord's bigger location and the more traditional stock. So that's quite an interesting one for landlords. The other one is that actually it can provide an energy to buildings. So if a landlord has got a new building, a big building, and you could think about this as an opportunity where they've not got enough critical mass in the larger floor plates, actually often a serviced office provider or a flex space provider will go in there, take on a rent-to-rent or a management agreement, create the buzz in the building, start spitting out some of these businesses that are growing and feeder businesses, as I say. So that energy helps when the landlord's showing the building to potential occupants. It definitely helps. So it's another little bonus for them. And you could offer to manage the overall facilities in the rest of the building, depending on what size the building it is, and even the sales for those other units for the landlord. So it's another little thing. There's another benefit for the landlord. They've got somebody on site looking out for potential customers. Now, they might be using a broker, of course, or a commercial sales agent to show space, but having somebody on site really makes a difference. So going back to Ewan's case, if it's perhaps a smaller landlord who's got some ancillary space there that Ewan didn't want to take on, but the landlord still wants looking after, then you could do a deal with that. You basically, you're taking on your own space, but you're helping manage, facilitate the rest of the building too. And it might just be from a case of the services that are coming into that building need looking after, and that's just part of the agreement that they will look after the services for the rest of the building too, which reduces the cost. And in the case of slow-moving stock, for the landlord again, a benefit for them, you take on that space, you take on the rates liability. So it's another benefit if they've got something that's not quite moving fast enough. So these are some of the benefits to landlords, but ultimately there's going to be an income there for them. So what about risks for you? Well, utilities is a big one, particularly in the current climate. You're going to take on the utilities for this space and for those sublet spaces, generally because there'll be one boiler one gas supply, one electric, or whatever the energy is that you're using. So they will have to be divided up however you want to do it, whether it's just included in the rent or whether you actually submeter, but that costs money to separate all these things out. So utilities is a risk for you. Running out of money is a potential risk. And of course, not getting enough customers or misjudging the market. So let's just talk about how to mitigate some of that, okay? So one of the things to look at in your own lease or your agreement with the landlord is get a break clause in there. So if you need to bail, you can do. So this one we're doing at the moment, we've got a 5-year break in there, which I think is adequate for us. It's a longer term lease, but it's a 5-year break in there. Should we feel that, you know what? This is just not working. The reason we're taking on such a small space, just I should have said that earlier on, for ourselves, is it's actually adjoining to another building. So it just works. It fits in well with this other space that we have, because although the other building is quite a bit bigger, it's not quite got the critical mass, and this piece will add a lot of value to our overall building. I think I mentioned it earlier on in the podcast anyway, but it's just to say that's why we're taking on a space of that size. Anyway, to mitigate risk, yeah, so make sure you've got a break clause in there so you can bail if you need to. Stress test those numbers, of course, on all sorts of scenarios. Utilities continuing to be higher or going higher, occupancy going up at half the pace you want it to, and at, I'm going to say half the money, but at a lower rent than you think. When I'm looking at areas, I'll find out what all the competition are charging, and when I'm doing my numbers, if I'm providing a better quality product, I'll still price it in my numbers based on the average of all the other stuff out there. You might even want to price it on the lower end, because then you know if it still makes money at that point, crikey, surely we found something good here. So, but have access to some money in case. So what I'm saying there is make sure that you don't spend everything on just getting to the starting line. Make sure you've got some in reserve in case things happen. That will help mitigate that risk. Understand the market before you jump in, of course, hugely important, is working out where that market demand is, what type of market demand it is, and whether you can satisfy it. The deal analyzer, I speak about that quite a lot, that jigsaw box cover that tells you roughly how a market should look, and it's up to you to work out where are the gaps on that picture. So it goes through things like the offer type. So on this one, we're talking more about flexible stuff rather than long-term leases. Is that something the market needs? We're talking about the quality of the space. You know, is there good quality out there? Too much good quality? Do you need something a bit more practical space, more economic? Or does it need to be higher quality? The size of the space is really important. You know, if you're talking about, yeah, there's loads of space, but actually it's all 10,000 square feet plus, that's not really going to help. Somebody needs a two-person office, right? So these little nuances make a difference in your local market. So this is the really important one about mitigating risk. Clearly there's contractual stuff you need to deal with there and money, but understanding the market, you've got everything else right, but there's no market, that's not good. So you've got to understand that first. And from the start, when you get this thing going, mitigating risk, be really good at your reporting so you know what's happening. Don't wait for 6 months or 12 months to look at your accounts and work out whether this thing's working or not. Really go understand your reporting. That comes down a little bit to getting the right processes and the right system in place to manage your space. Now, if it's small and it's just you and three other rooms, going back to the question at the start of this, then, hey, you probably get a good handle on it day to day anyway. But if you're talking 10, 15, 20 different spaces, this is when you really need to have a bit more understanding and good reporting on what's going on. One of the things that I think is really critical in the market now is making sure the process for customers is as frictionless as possible, even if it means at the back end there's some disjointed bits for you that you've got to fix. You've got to be thinking about those customers. There will be competition out there. Make sure it's as frictionless as possible for those customers. That really reduces your risk of shunning customers and not making the space successful. I think it's an easy win. It's not simple, but it's an easy win to get things as frictionless as possible. We've got it to a point now where regularly customers for certainly one of our locations, they can find us online, they're booking online, they're paying for it online. when they turn up in the morning that they've booked, because this is for a day pass, when they turn up for the day, basically it's all paid for. Our front of house staff know that they're turning up. And I don't think we've quite got the connection in the software to make it so that the customer immediately gets sent their internet access. We have still got a human interaction there, but when they come in on site in the morning, their internet is set up, they just get the codes and whatnot, boom, they're off, sorted. It's a really frictionless process for customers now, especially those short-term customers just coming for a day or a week or that sort of thing. Anyway, take space for yourself, of course, for your own business, if that's what you've got. Just make sure it's oversized. It's such an easy way in. That's a way to mitigate risk, because you've got a requirement for the space anyway for your own business. And gosh, if you're in business, you'll have customers, you'll have suppliers. There will be some of those guys that want space. They're renting from somebody down the street right now. It's not quite working out. Their landlord hasn't done up the place, or there's just so many different things that happen. Just there's a lot of low hanging fruit out there. Probably people you already know who would take one or two of those spaces. Make sure you can sublet. I mentioned that earlier on, without landlord approval. It might be that you're using licenses to do that. And of course, another way to mitigate risk, which is almost a fait accompli when you're talking to agents, is negotiate a rent-free period. It's funny, when the shoe's on the other foot, we really don't do rent-free periods, especially with licenses, because rent-free is usually based around you as a tenant fitting out the space and having a bit of time to do that. Whereas in our space, our model, our stock is ready within 24 hours. So if somebody wants an office, in fact, to be honest, if somebody turned up at our building and wanted an office from that day, as long as we could go through all the checks and everything else we need to do and the money was deposited, blah, 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 they could have that space and get the keys. Because our spaces are ready. They're painted, they're carpeted, they've got everything in there that they need. So really, do they need a rent-free? No. But anyway, I'm getting off topic. Negotiate a rent-free for yourself if you're fitting out a space and you want to do subletting. It's almost an unwritten rule out there that that's what happens. Right, let's jump on to management of contracts. I mentioned that earlier on. Some of you are listening that are totally au fait with the flexible space market will understand this no problem. In fact, you've probably switched off. But for those of you who are just getting started, a management contract, and this doesn't directly relate to Ewan's question, so I won't dwell on it for too long, but a management contract is used a lot for the larger operators. It's where you have this agreement to share the risk with the landlord. Sometimes the landlord, if it's a large operator, they can push the landlord to actually do all the CapEx. What does CapEx mean? That's basically the capital expenditure. So that the partitions, the desk, front desk, you know, all the plush areas, the lighting, everything. They're fitting it all out and spending that money. And I have had some people come to me who are private investors. They've got some office space, perhaps a reasonable size, and they've had a discussion with some of the larger operators, and they've been given this management agreement, looking at it thinking, holy moly, this is pretty onerous. Where's the risk? And not for the landlord, for the operator. And what they're doing is mitigating the risk as much as possible by doing a management agreement where the landlord takes out a lot of the capital expenditure, and there's a basic management fee paid to the operator, to whatever level, effectively, to a level that allows them to pay for everything that they're putting in, like staff and sales and management and systems. And, of course, create an element of profit over that. Then there's a profit share over and above. So the landlord gets, it might be a small rent or it might be no rent, but a profit share over a lower based management fee, if hopefully I'm making sense there. These things are negotiated. So sometimes there might be a basic rental, then a profit share after that. More often than not, I believe it's more of an actual basic management fee that goes straight to the operator before the landlord actually starts earning money. But then when the trigger starts happening, the landlord will have the potential to make more money than if they'd actually rented out the space as a white box, if you will. So there is an upside to the landlord, and you know, it certainly can be presented in that way. And you know, some of these operators, they can make a lot of money in these locations, and the landlord will make a lot of money too. If it's a location that doesn't work so well, the landlord might put a lot of capital expenditure in there. The basic management fee means that the operator doesn't lose any money, and when it comes to the end of it, they walk away. So I'm not saying it's a bad thing or a good thing. It's just this, some of the different scenarios that happen with management contracts. There isn't one size fits all in there. There will be little nuances in management contracts, but you get the basics here. So hopefully I've not managed to confuse you. I've almost confused myself on that one. But finally, let's talk about competition. Always keep an eye on the competition. So if you're going to do one of these rent-to-rent spaces, whether you've moved your own business in or not, whatever the competition are up to, you need to learn from it. Spot what's working, what isn't. Don't spend all your time comparing your operation to theirs, of course, but spot what's happening and keep an eye on whether there's competitive things coming into that market that could take your customers away from you. That goes without saying anyway. I mean, even if you've bought the building and you're operating in it from a service point of view or a flexible space point of view, of course you're going to have to do that anyway. But it's just worth reiterating that competition is a great way for learning. It's a great way for spotting what works and what doesn't, and for maybe doing a bit of that market analysis. But equally, if you're not paying attention, they might eat your lunch. So let's just get back to how we started this again. It was with Ewan's question. Can I use this as a way to get started? Absolutely yes. Particularly when it's combined with your own business taking space. But think of this for a second. Rent to serviced accommodation is often carried out in the serviced accommodation business, isn't it? The same is done here. That's exactly what we're talking about. It's not for the faint-hearted, but it is a thing. It is growing, and actually this is quite comparable. It's just serviced space. We're not providing beds, we're providing desks. And it's very common. There are management agreements out there. There are leases out there for subletting. You need to reach out to your lawyer, or we might have some that we could maybe provide for you. But effectively, this is a tried and tested method. It is something that can be done, and it's definitely something you can do with your business moving in and taking on someone just a bit oversized and getting the whole thing moving. It's getting in the swim, right? So it's a great question. Thanks for asking it. So finally, let me just take a couple of minutes to talk a little bit about the expansion of our membership network. As I mentioned before, we've been working with a small number of advanced commercial property investors over the last few years, but now it's time to open up that learning to a wider audience. We're not going to be giving you everything, but this new level of membership called Getting in the Swim is for just that. It's helping those that are moving from resi into commercial to dip their toes in the water, understand how the market works, understand where they could potentially find a strategy to work for them and develop that strategy. If you get to a level where you're thinking, right, I'm getting serious about this, here's a building I want to do, Jerry, can you help? Can you and your team help me focus on this? Absolutely. That's a different level. That's more advanced stuff. But right now, this is something for those of you that are wanting to get started in this but are finding it difficult to connect with the right people, connect with the right investors that are already doing this, to learn from them. It's quite a closed industry for some reason. So we've been pulling this together, some content, structure, to extend our CPI network to this wider audience. It's ready. We've just launched it. I think on the last podcast episode, I talked a little bit about it. Well, there'll be a link in the show notes too. But just as a quick summary, the components that are going to be on this platform, that one of the key things is 4 full day live networking events a year. So once a quarter, those that are able will come together to meet with all the peers in the network. There will be some good education there. Some of our suppliers will be there, some examples and case studies, all that sort of lovely stuff that goes on. They're 4 times a year. There's a private Facebook group, which is obviously there all the time for members only, which you'll be invited to join. Access to live online content every fortnight for networking and education, including some of the things we already do, which is a monthly podcast guest Q&A. So that's a private conversation we have with podcast guests after recording episodes where our members can ask Q&A questions. We also do a monthly deal forum, which you'll have access to, and some more exclusive how-to content. So PDFs, documents, deal analyzers, that sort of thing in there as well. And access to some video content, which we've been working on. So things about different strategies, tips, tactics, that sort of stuff will also be in there. So joining the CPI network will allow you to benefit from, I guess, that support of other investors, some industry professionals, and find the opportunities to collaborate and learn from one another. And even recently, I got an email to say two members on our advanced group have just done a great deal. Great deal of win-win for both. And others are collaborating on projects and having some successful working relationships. So that's one of the benefits you can find. So you're really just putting yourself in an environment where you can learn from others who perhaps scaled their property business a little bit further, commercial business. They're just a little bit further ahead. And there'll be someone in the network who has the experience to help you get to those next steps. So don't feel you have to do this all on your own. So if you want to find out more, jump into the show notes. It's a deliberately low price, and we're not going to keep it at that low price for too long. And we are actually giving a 10% discount on these prices too. Now, the way to get that is you need to be on our mailing list. But to circumnavigate that, if you send us an email and just say, look, I'm interested in GetSwim. Can I get the access code to get my 10% discount? Because I listened to the podcast. That's where I heard about this. Then we'll send that out to you and it'll allow you to get that discount on the Getting the Swim membership price. So check out the show notes for a link to get more details and reserve your spot. We have our first event coming up on the 8th of November. If you're listening to this after that, don't worry, there'll be more. And a lot of it is recorded. So a lot of that stuff will be recorded and kept online so you can get access to that. So if you're thinking about adding commercial to your portfolio, you want to start getting investing in commercial, then remember, you need to get in the swim. Speak to you next time. Hi there. I hope you're enjoying the content delivered on the CPI podcast. Even though it's free to listen to, it actually takes quite a bit of time and financial commitment to deliver each and every episode. Did you know that by leaving a positive written review, you, yes, you, will have a direct impact on the visibility of the podcast? And that's really important, because by reaching a wider audience, it helps our team to continually improve the overall content that we deliver to you week after week. For some of you, leaving a review will be second nature, but for others, it might be your first one. Open your podcast app, pick the CPI podcast and search for previous reviews. And on iTunes in particular, click to look at all of the reviews and then you'll see an option to leave a written review. Go on, it'll only take 2 minutes and it'll really make our day. And we genuinely read every single one of them.